All right. This is Christopher Ash with the My First Amendment Right podcast. And today I have with me Orlando Owens. How you doing, sir?
I'm blessed, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, I met Orlando a few weeks ago in Milwaukee outside of the RNC event. How did that go for you?
It was definitely enlightening. I didn't get a chance to get inside the actual event, but I was out on the perimeter. Met a lot of good people. I felt a lot of energy coming out of there.
Yeah, that's what I noticed too. As I kind of gave you a little short backstory on me as we were walking along the street there, I'm actually new to the Republican Party. New to being, I guess you could call me a conservative now. I'm not really one for titles or labels, right? I'm just an American trying to make the best decisions that I can make. You know, the titles don't mean anything because what is conservative today wasn't considered conservative 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You know what I mean? The needle keeps moving on us. So, you know, yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of good energy just going on outside the RNC. People were hopeful and optimistic, things like that. Now, Mr. Owens, if you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of background about yourself, like where you're from, how you grew up. Have you been a conservative Republican your whole life?
So I'm from Milwaukee. Grew up here. Born in St. Louis, but grew up here. Educated in a mixture of black public schools and white public schools. Went to one of our local universities, University of Whitewater. Did about 2 years there, and I found out that I liked the party a whole lot. So I had to come home and get a job. I became a parent.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. So I have a 28-year-old, and I'm a grandfather, and I'm a dad of a 3-year-old. So
you're like Robert De Niro, but better.
The reins that all over. But I finished my degree in Morris Brown, which is a historical black college in Atlanta, Georgia, in a business degree. And got the bug of politics early on in life. Grew up in an environment with my grandparents and my dad. My mom and dad were divorced really early. Dad's a Marine, and he started his new family here in the city. And my mom, I seen a lot of things growing up between my mom just having a lot of mental health challenges growing up, self-esteem issues. So I saw domestic abuse growing up. But my dad was, not across town. He was in my life, not as much as he probably wanted to, because he had another family as well too. So athletics and academics were really big in my life. My faith was really big in my life, although I didn't grow up, a church kid, but I was definitely in the church, which still directed my path most of my life is my faith. Had my own battles, married and divorced, lost a business, had to rebuild, lost everything, was homeless at one time. And, I got recently married again about over almost 11 years ago. We've been together and, we had tried to conceive a child. And in my first marriage, we were not able to conceive a child. I was engaged before and I had that's my oldest son, he's 28. So my first marriage didn't get a chance and we did not conceive and it was hard. Played a role in our divorce. Quite honestly, we had a really good business, but what we didn't do well was the marriage. We own a lot of real estate, and I lost everything and half the business, and had to reinvent myself. And I knew then that I had to do the best I could. But with the grace of God and this great country, I can tell you that anybody can rebound from being right at the cusp of middle class. Lower middle class to losing everything. Coming from poverty, getting to the bottom rung of the middle class, losing everything, having to start all over again. And now we're, middle class family. We still struggle. But God has been good, man. I work for a great U.S. senator. I'm full disclosure. I'm on my own time. But I work for U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I've been with him now for almost 11 years. I'm sorry, almost 10 years now. On his staff. But I was, so in the black community, most black folk, we're a morally conservative, but we're socially liberal. So when I went through my, I guess my transformation, my growth and development, I thought I was a Democrat. You know, grandma was a Democrat. Everybody, you know, you're Black and you got to be voting Democrat, as Joe said. So I thought I was. And so I actually ran for office a few different times here locally.
Oh, wow.
When I graduated from Morris Brown in Atlanta, Georgia, I came back home. I missed my son. You know, I wanted to see him grow. And so my dad was really active, kind of in the neighborhood. He was a block captain. So, that's a neighborhood block watch. My grandmother was always active with, you know, the block, always cleaning up, you know, around picking up paper. So we're always kind of community minded.
Yeah.
So I come home and my dad invites me to come to one of the aldermanic meetings. We in the city of Milwaukee, our local officials are called aldermen. Somebody may be called councilmen wherever you live. But ours are called aldermen. And so they were having a meeting, community meeting, and the alderman was there. My dad was like, come with me, son. You just got back from college. You know, bring someone who's smarts with you, whatever, right? I'm like, okay, Dad, I'll go. And this
dad,
is how
I'm smarts.
Yeah, I wish I would have left. Wish I would have stayed home on some levels. But I get there, and the outgoing alderman, who's a long-term Black Democrat man, is gearing up to run for an open seat for the mayor. He's the interim mayor, getting ready to run for the mayor for a term. And he's segueing and basically passing the seat to his aide. And in this meeting, he's like, well, taxes are about to go up and, taxes are about to go up. And so I'm like, wait a minute. My dad is a union guy. So my dad's a big Democrat. So I'm like, well, I see how my dad lived. And they're kind of, you know, put it together. I know how my grandma lived, and I know how my mom lived. We can't really afford to pay more. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, Dad, this don't seem right. He was like, well, Mr. College grad, why don't you ask the alderman yourself? And I said, well, I think I will. And I raised my hand. I said, Mr. Alderman, can you tell me why do taxes have to go up? He said, son, taxes just have to go up. It's just the way it is. And that, for me, was the spark to say, I don't like that answer.
Right.
It's not good enough for me.
That's not good for most people.
And so that kind of started me down this path of learning more about property taxes, how taxation, what's funded off the property tax, you know, who pays the property tax. And so that kind of started me going. And my dad was like, you really getting into this, right? I'm like, yeah, because this was not right. I've been in student government before. I was an academic All-American at Morris Brown. I played basketball there for the school, walked onto the team, student council. I was in the student council, also the business council. I was president of the marketing club. So I had a rough understanding of, you know, government and, you know, organizations, but I was like, this don't seem right. He said, well, if you're getting this much into it, you should run. I said, you got a point, Dad. So I threw my hat in the race. I lost my first two races for alderman against the same person. But along that path, I saw the power of the parties. Mm. Although city councilmen or aldermen in our city are supposed nonpartisan races, they're very partisan. And I didn't know that. And so I thought I needed to have the power of the Democrat Party behind me and become an official member. And so I joined the party. And I went to a few meetings. And in their meetings, there were a few things that rubbed me the wrong way. I'm a recent college grad. And what I heard in that room was white people, a white woman in particular, said, we got to help our Black brothers because the white man is trying to hold them down. Now, I'm a recent grad from Atlanta. In Atlanta, I saw extreme poverty, just like I saw in Milwaukee. But I also saw a tremendous amount of affluency. You know, and for Black people, they had a Black mayor, Black police chief, Black doctors, Black. So I've seen it on both sides.
Right.
So when she said that, it really got me very angry because I'm like, I just graduated cum laude. We didn't have to see white people at all in Atlanta if I didn't want to see white people, because we could stay right where and never have to see white people.
Right.
What I learned was that I said, we don't need a white savior. I already got one of those. I don't need you to come saving me. And so as she was talking, I'm like, so she's proclaiming to be the good white people. And the other folks are supposed to be the bad white people.
Right.
But to me, y'all all look white. So, but you the good white people. I'm supposed to know that you the good white. And then there was another lady who stood up and said, don't forget about the LBGQ. We got to fight for them too. Now, from a faith standpoint, I knew that lifestyle wasn't one that commiserated with the faith. Now, I'm not one to say people should be treated wrong. But now you just went against my faith and my intelligence. At that point, I had the question, is this party for me?
Right.
And it wasn't. And so I started listening to conservative talk radio. And
what was the first one you listened to?
The first guy I listened to was this guy. He died a few years ago. He had a golden mic. Oh, Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, really?
The golden EIB. And I would listen to this guy because I've heard him. You know, I heard people talk about Rush Limbaugh and it was during the Bush years and all that, the Obama transition, everything. And I started listening and I said, I don't know if I would have said it that way, but I don't disagree with him.
Right, the main point.
Kept listening. I said, this kind of lines up with me. I'm a former athlete. I'm a business guy. So I believe that, you know, if you believe you can sell the most toothpicks in your toothpick stand, this is America. You should go be the best toothpick seller you can. Make all the money you can. Mm-hmm. And then I love my guns. I love, like, the right to defend myself. And so I'm hearing this conservative message, not knowing I was a conservative all my life. We just never called it conservative in the Black community. And so then there was a local guy here, where you just came from Milwaukee, by the name of Mark Belling. Mark Belling is a really big conservative voice here in the city of Milwaukee, or in the state of Wisconsin. But I heard him because he was subbing for Rush Limbaugh one day because Rush was sick or whatever, couldn't make it. But he was like, live from wherever, I'm subbing for Rush, so Mark Belling out of Milwaukee. I was like, Milwaukee? So I started listening to him after Rush, and I listened. And I said, yeah. Wouldn't have said it that way, but I don't disagree with him.
Right.
And I started saying, well, am I conservative? I kept listening. I said, am I a Republican? I kept listening and I arrived at this conclusion. I said, I'm a conservative Black Republican. Get out of here. Because the ideas lined up with me in the way I live, that especially being an athlete and a student, that you got to work hard in the classroom. There's no shortcuts. Athletically, only the people who worked the hardest, who performed the highest, got most of the playing time. They were the ones who excelled. You know, when I played athletics, it was not, well, we can't play against this white team because this white team was coming in. You know, they got all the best facilities and, you know, this white boys. It was the strangest thing. I never hear race and how we are oppressed, you know, on the athletic field. I only hear it in the classroom and in life. Well, you know, coach that I've ever had, be a white coach or Black coach, ever said, we supposed to lose because, you know, these white boys, they just better than y'all. And so the messages didn't jive. So in one minute, you want to make me this all, you know, fearless gladiator to go out on a football field or a basketball court and compete with anybody. But then you turn around and say, but you know, America, you got to work twice as hard as a white boy, because this is America, you know. So that was kind of my, you know, my evolution becoming a Republican. And when I arrived at that, I wanted to join the Republican Party. At that time, there was no Republican Party that I knew of that was in Milwaukee that I thought. And so I joined a local party right in the same suburb that I went to for high school in Wauwatosa. And I'll never forget it. The guy has now passed. He's been passed. His name was Bill Bourdain. He was the chairman of the Wauwatosa Republican Club branch. And I walk into this campaign office, and all the eyes turn. Everybody on phones, they making sign, they look. And I see this guy, this big guy in the back. I said, he looked like he in charge. And everybody's looking. And I'm making a beeline toward this guy. And he gets off the phone and said, how can I help you, sir? I said, well, I came to help. He said, glad you're here. Grab a phone. And I started campaigning. I started volunteering on campaigns. And I joined at the time. I didn't know, but I ended up joining the Milwaukee branch. There was a Milwaukee club, a smaller branch that I did join. And I'm now in my second full term as the chairman of the Milwaukee Northside branch of the GOP, Milwaukee County. And I've been a Republican now for probably 15 years now. I ran for office. I worked for one of the best kick-ass senators ever, in U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I'm the point person for an initiative we call the Joseph Project. That is it's an inner city collaboration with a local church. My best friend, he passed now. He passed through complications that he had a lot of pre-existing conditions and plus COVID. He passed, but him and I created this thing called the Joseph Project, and Senator Johnson was part of that creation as well, too. Prior to working for Senator Johnson, I worked for the state party, and I worked for the RNC. And before then, I worked in job development most of my life, helping people find work. So I'm definitely dedicated to the Black community, to seeing Black men in particular find good-paying jobs. So I think that's the key, is having a great-paying job and a great education. Mm. And that's kind of what led me, you know, I've been active now for about 15, 17 years in the Republican movement, and that's kind of my story.
Nice. Beautifully said. Very, 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 very insightful. I appreciated that. I enjoyed that. You know, the journey, you know, I think a lot of us in this country, I think it's even like, it's programming, right? When we grow up and even take our civics class in high school and get out, you don't hear in the media them talk about the fact that the United States is a constitutional republic. You know, they say we have a democracy, and you think democracy, Democrat, you know, it's like very similar. So you're like, okay, well, the Democrats must be the good guys. You know what I mean? And it goes all the way back to, I think, even like the Axis versus the Allies. Mm-hmm. Their colors are red. Red. China's red. Red is bad. Bad, 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 bad. We need the bad guys. And I think a lot of the youth grows up in this country. Again, like you said, you know, labels are not labels. They want to call it liberalism. And then now it's the extreme left is the liberals. But it's more just about, when we say liberals, it's like personal freedoms. Right? That's what we're talking about. We get it confused, you know, like I said, with the Democratic Party. And like you said, it's like they create the victimhood mentality. You know, as I told you, I was an ally of the LGBT community for 15 years growing up from my era, because this is before gay marriage and everything like that. And I just, you know, again, and I'm just recently getting into my own religious journey, or my own, you know, finding a God. I don't know if I'm ever going to commit myself to any particular religion, just because, you know, I have this thing with trusting men and anything that men write, you know, the corruption of power and everything. So I feel there's some things that supersede even the word of men or anything that we can read that is godly in this world. But I feel like, you know, the Democratic Party has a history of creating these movements. You know, they say the road to hell is laid with good intentions. And, you know, the way they say things, you know, when you're young, you can get on board with it, kind of like, yeah, like everybody should have the right to exist peacefully, right? Nobody should be fired from their jobs because of who they love behind closed doors. You know, just like we have this is the First Amendment right podcast, and in honoring the First Amendment, you know, you have the right to be religious or not religious or do whatever religion you freely choose in this country. That's a cornerstone of it, you know, with your free speech and things like that. So, you know, again, growing up in this country, you really kind of get tomfooleried into thinking democratic, democracy, we're for the people. But then you kind of look at how they go about helping people and kind of like where we are now. You know, I'm 36. I was born in 87. I didn't get to see the 60s, 70s, or, you know, most of the 80s. The 90s is when I had a thought in my head. But just, you know, looking back statistically, you know, yeah, we may have got gay marriage passed through, which in my honest opinion, the federal government and government itself should have no say in civil unions regarding religious preferences because of separation of church and state. But, you know, if one person can have a civil union, the other person should be able to have a civil union, blah, blah, blah. And then we got our trans rights stuff down. And, but, you know, even things, issues like abortion, you know, at one point in time, I did know that abortions were not something that anybody were proud of. It wasn't something that you looked forward to getting in your lifetime. It was something that was reserved for extreme cases. And because maybe you're a mistress and you got pregnant with, you know, somebody else's kid that you shouldn't have, or you know, medical complication. And it just seems like the Democratic Party has push these social issues in a way that has created, you know, this victimhood mentality for people. Suicide rates are through the roof. Depression's through the roof. Wages have been stagnant. You know, it's like they got us kind of focusing on all the issues in the wrong ways and fighting amongst ourselves here. And for me, you know, like I said, I'm 36, and this is about the time most men, I think, kind of start becoming, you know, going from that liberal phase to that, like, government get the fuck out of my life type phase. Like, what the hell is this shit? Like, right. Okay, we're doing too much. We're doing too much. You know, at some point you're like, okay, this isn't liberal anymore. This isn't freedom anymore. This is, you're trying to tell me how I need to be. Mm-hmm. You know, just like you said, you know, you liked some of the men that you grew up listening to. You're like, maybe wouldn't have said it that way. But, you know, then that's another thing the Democrats get caught up so much on, too. It's not actually going around fixing any problems. They're so hyper-focused on PC culture that we never get to the actual issues. The moment you say the wrong thing, instead of actually discussing the issue at hand, we got to talk about why what you said's wrong, what we got to do about that, and whose feelings you're hurting, and blah, 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 blah. Right?
Right.
You know, for me, because I was so involved with civil rights myself, and, you know, I marched during BLM, but it wasn't about, for me, it wasn't about Black Lives Matter, because I'm like, you know, everybody's life matters, but it's more like, you know, I could see maybe we needed some police accountability. You know, maybe as a police department, it shouldn't be such a fraternity as it should be more public service. And really caring about the citizens, you know, I shouldn't be seeing people handcuffed and beaten. And I, you know, it just, there's just some, it seemed like some common sense things could be done to kind of, you know, get the public on the same side. Because remember, we don't have a song called Fuck the Fire Department.
That's true.
And then, you know, I was, you know, just like J.D. Vance, I was kind of anti-Trump back in 2016. I was anti-Hillary more than I was anti-Trump, actually. If you want to go back to 2016, you'll find me shitting all over Hillary. I didn't care about Trump. To me, Trump was like, I was like, he's not a Republican. He's not a Democrat. You know, technically he grew up a Democrat, but to me, he was like, you know, he's his own thing, but mm-hmm. I feared Hillary. You know, I feared the warmonger. You know, I didn't want to go in direct war with Russia back in 2016. Then once Trump got in the office, you know, being tied to the LGBT community, I kept seeing, you know, just all the propaganda, all the fear mongering. So I thought, you know, maybe there's some to this. And so I voted against them. But after Trump got out of office, and then January 6th was kind of a red flag to me. I don't know how you can have an insurrection when no one's armed against the United States government. I mean, it's like bringing a pin to a gunfight.
Yeah, I agree. You know?
And then just seeing the Russiagate thing get debunked and all this good jazz. And then, you know, he didn't gain presidential immunity with the Supreme Court decision. They just reinforced the presidential immunity that already exists for every president preceding him. And I haven't seen Bush Jr. get charged for anything. I haven't seen Obama get charged for anything. And then out of nowhere, I hear these bullshit cases coming up. Because, look, you know, it's not that he tried to overturn the election, it's that he questioned the integrity of the election. And let's not forget that when Bush Jr., was it Bush Jr. back away when he first got elected, his brother in Florida, there was a recount that was supposed to happen because his brother was a senator, said, nah, we're just going to give him the...
It was the governor.
Yeah, it was the governor.
It was the hanging chads. They were talking about the, you know, could you make out the ballots, and the Supreme Court stepped in. But yeah, I mean, everything you're saying is spot on. We you kind of see a double standard, and you see some hypocrisy going on. It sounds like to me you're seeing some things as you're starting to look at it, you're saying something's not. Yeah. Go ahead with the story.
Exactly. And then, you know, just, and to me, what I saw was the weaponization of the justice system, like I did not see under him. And that's when I was like, yeah, no, I'm done. I was like, look, you know, the thing I grew up in the 90s, we knew not to trust the government. We knew not to mass conform. There was like, you know, if you trusted the government, if you were a conformist back in the 90s, you were like not liked, you know, because it was un-American. We didn't like cheaters. We didn't like conformists. And you knew better than to trust big government. And once I see, you know, and again, Trump is not a lifelong politician.
Correct.
We didn't get to where we are because of 4 years of Trump. Like, just, you know, I may not be college educated, but I wasn't born yesterday. And so once I saw the weaponization of the justice system, to me, you know, it's like, even if I'm not in love with Trump, but I understand where he's coming from and what he represents, it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yep.
And if they can take him down for no fucking reason, then they can take me down for having the wrong opinion. And that's just not the American way. That's not why we have the Constitution and things like that. So I'm right here with you now as well. I registered as a Republican recently, and you know, I'm looking to get involved as much as possible because I love this. I went through my liberal phase. I hated, you know, as I found out about the history of this country, and maybe had some disdain for how we got to certain places. But, you know, at the end of the day, looking around the world, as I traveled, like, you know, there's nowhere else to go. You know, if you want true freedom in the world, in this world, the United States is the last stop right now. So we really have to buckle down and defend this. Now, I was talking with you earlier. You also have a project going on here in Milwaukee called Move the Needle. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, Move the Needle is a get out the vote effort that we're doing here in the city of Milwaukee. As you know, there are about 4 to 5 battleground states, or, you know, swing states that kind of determine every presidential election. And Wisconsin is one of those states all the time. But we have 2 huge populations of Democrats that they just overwhelmingly just outpace Republicans. And that's Dane County and also Milwaukee County. Inside of Milwaukee County, the biggest city in the state is the city of Milwaukee, where I live. And we want to do better in Milwaukee. Not saying that we're going to win the city of Milwaukee nor the county, but if we can do better, i.e. move the needle in the right direction, then that turnout could help the overall count in the state. Mm-hmm. We do that, and our state part does their part, then we win Wisconsin. We win Wisconsin, we got a chance of winning the White House. And so we're looking at trying to get maybe 10,000 more votes in the city of Milwaukee, Black votes in particular, for Donald Trump. I think this election and every election moving forward for statewide is that will come through Milwaukee. There's a new bubbling up of people who are concerned about America and what's happening with our border, what's happening with the citizens who are here, and in particular, Black men. Black men are looking at Donald Trump differently. I'm not going to be one who's so naive to say that Black men are saying, I'm a Republican. They like Trump. Right. Trump has been the draw. He's the draw. Now, what we do with people and connect with people once they, you know, lean our way, now we must govern. Now we must show people why this would be a better alternative even moving forward, even once Trump leaves the stage. But Trump is the initial magnet. He's the initial draw. Now, we now need to be able to connect with people on issues that are concerning them. And so one of the issues that we're looking at, we're targeting different places in the city of Milwaukee where high rents were, you know, cast in the city. We had a bunch of referendums that we raised the property taxes for the biggest school system in the state. It's called Milwaukee Public Schools, that are failing Black and brown and poor kids. And we just passed a citywide referendum raising the property values on all the homeowners. And then some renters are like, well, I don't care because I don't own a home. But if you rent, who do you think the landlord is going to pass the cost of to? So even renters, this affects you when they raise property taxes. And so we look at, we're looking at certain wards in the city and in Wisconsin. And this may not be popular to some Republicans, and I can have a debate with them, and we can debate that. But in Wisconsin, if you are a felon off paper, meaning done with probation, you can vote. And we have one of the highest concentrations of felons in the city of Milwaukee. And a lot of them, probably 85% of them, are men, Black and Latino men, who definitely like Trump and the conservative message. But we have to get them to now take liking or being upset with a situation, now moving them to go out and vote. If we can get these men to go out and vote, man, we can change some things. And you know, Trump's First Step Act helped a lot of federal guys. He did the opportunity zones that brought a lot of attention to areas for possible collaboration between private dollars and maybe some other initiatives to do more concentrated job development or development in local Black communities. I'm a Black college grad. I like the fact that he, you know, locked in funding for Black colleges. I'm still a 2A guy. I still love my guns. I still love my freedoms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some felons, I've talked to some Republicans, depending on the felony, some Republicans are even willing to say, well, if a felon has done with all his probation, let's not just reincite his voting rights, but all of his rights. We have at least 13 states that reenact gun rights to felons after they're done with probation, and they've been had a clean bill of health ever since they got a probation. And I'm for that. You say, well, because if we're going to be honest about it, a lot of these felons live in some of the most challenging neighborhoods in Milwaukee. And as a man, there are things biologically and in our DNA that we just are built to do, which is one, provide for our families, and two, protect our families.
Yep.
So if I'm living in one of the most highest concentrated of crime, how do you think I'm gonna defend myself if something bumped at the door with the woman I'm laying with and my children?
Yep.
So let's be realistic on, you know, and I, some felons may not be redeemable, but as a believer myself, and this is where sometimes my Christian believers, we kind of butt heads sometimes. If we can forgive, if God said we can forgive all, even the redemption of man can be redeemed. And again, I understand, I'm not trying to make it a blanket carte blanche, but just to having a conversation for Black men about the possibilities of an organization that is actively looking for your vote. Let's be very transparent here. Democrats don't want the Black man vote. They don't want men voting, especially Black men voting. They want the women. That's why the women want the more of the programs. They want the food stamp. They want the public housing. Because men don't have the jobs in the city to provide. If we had the jobs to provide. Now, if you're a criminal-minded person, you're just a criminal, then yeah, you got to go. But if your reason for doing crime is because I can't find a living, that's why the Joseph Project is so important. Men who honestly want an opportunity to say, I'm done with the street life, then come on, let's make something happen. So the Project Move the Needle is one that I think will play a big role here in the city, and you just get trying to just move that needle in the right direction.
I like that. So what would you say the feeling is on the ground in Milwaukee for your community?
I think Kamala and the whole Biden thing, there has been a bump. I will say that. But I think it's a momentary bump. I think the more comes out about Kamala's record, her new running mate, I think more of these things we're going to see. I think a segue in the campaign that's going to start really looking at her record. I think the question of her Blackness is a question that a lot of people don't really care anymore. But there are foundational Blacks who look at that, you know, basically, you know, saying you're Black and you're not as a problem. Foundational Blacks still look at this connection to the possibility of the question of reparations. Because every person of color, a Black person, wouldn't be considered a foundational Black. Foundational Blacks are descendants of slaves. So when you have a woman who can say that she's Asian and Jamaican, if you talk to a Jamaican, a real Jamaican, they don't claim they're American Black. They say they're Jamaican. That's right. The first thing, I'm right. Jamaican.
Yeah, they don't.
So let's be clear. Everybody who got dark hue don't make them Black. So I think she has some problems trying to, you know, write this course. I think the whole war issue of them just, you know, continuing to put more money into the Ukraine, the whole idea was going on the Gaza Strip. That is something that no matter what Democrats you put in, they all have the same positions. Now, going back into Kamala's record in California and San Francisco, looking at how she locked up parents for kids for truancy, you know, having low-level drug charges for weed and, you know, low-level drug possession, but you can go on, you know, the morning show with, you know, what is his name? The guy from the show, I'm drawing a blank right now, but and laugh about smoking weed. But you got brothers locked up. You know, so how are you making this right? So I think the more her record called Charlemagne the God, that's who I was drawing a blank.
At least
sure about that. So how are you laughing at you for smoking weed but got being locked up? Wait, I'm sorry.
I would say Charlemagne's the same one who sat there and let Joe Biden say to the whole entire black community, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. And just like, I think he just like, you know, obviously because I think Charlemagne's one of those ones. I particularly don't care for him because he definitely seems like a leftist pundit, you know, paid for mouthpiece. I think he wanted to say something, but I think he realized if he did, he was going to lose a lot of money.
Right. And now he's all in for Kamala. Now they're all in for Kamala.
And it's so forced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get the younger generation is getting duped by it. You know, because again, when you're young, and until you start going down the rabbit hole of things, you know, you can be easily misled, and then the whole. You know, this whole generation underneath me, you know, I'm a millennial, but Gen Z is getting, they're the ones that are trying to say there's 700 genders. And
well, I think it's getting more exposure. I think this is where the Trump campaign has to go because her record has to be what's on display. We've had the, you know, the question of her blackness and that cackling laugh she has. I think we're past that now. I think we now have to start looking at her record. And I think this is where people also misconflate the issue of her blackness. It was like, how can you dare talk about her blackness? It's not that it's her blackness the question. It is that she's willing to conform to anything to get what she wants.
Yep.
And one minute she's an Asian American and she touts that card. The next she wants to tout that, you know, she's, you know, black, but she's not really. And she touts, I went to a black house. Well, every black house, there's plenty of white people to go to black shoes. And there's plenty of white people and non-blacks who are in black sororities and fraternities. Yep. So just because you went to Howard and you play as AKA don't mean you black. So again, her record now has to be on full display, which that's what campaigns are about. Yep. And I think you line up Trump's record and her record. If you want to talk about J.D. Vance, that's fine. I think he can defend his record. But now you have a running mate. Who's had some very, let's say, odd positions that came out today. And it's still, you know, now we're going to go through this deep dive of who she picked. Oh, to me, again, Kamala having the question of being black or, you know, it's not about the question of being black, but her willingness to do whatever she needs to do to make, you know, that's the question. Who are you getting today?
Exactly. I don't think it's so much questioning her blackness. I think it's, you know, if you, like, again, you look at her record, and it's obvious that she doesn't care about the black community. She's never, there's not one thing in her history as AG or senator that would tell you she has done one positive thing for the black community. You know, I go on social media, I see people on lives, you know, if you go on TikTok, kind of like the atmosphere is like, people go on live and they you know, they got like the whole banner of like who they're for. They'll do like battles between Trump and Kamala Harris. And I challenge any of these kids to tell me, just tell me one accomplishment of Kamala Harris. Just even as VP, as a senator, as AG, tell me one positive, like net positive thing she's done. Because like you said, locking up people over small drug offense charges. I don't know if she was a senator, AG, when she did this, but also using prison labor as quote unquote slavery.
That's AG.
Yeah, and then
men on death row, on sentencing, withholding evidence. How in the world that's okay? So as the black people say, so now you finna elect the ops now. You finna hire the crooked DA now, huh? Yeah. That's what you want. You want to elect the crooked DA.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, and this is where the whole question of who is Kamala? In one clip, Kamala, you're against fracking. Now you all for fracking because you need to win Pennsylvania. In one moment, you defund the police. Now you're like, well, no, we need the police. And one, open the border. Now you're saying, oh, no, the border got to be. So who is this woman we're trying to elect?
Have you heard her talk?
Huh?
Have you heard her talk?
Yes, I heard her speak. Like, you know, to be what is and what is to be.
Oh,
and, you know, to be unbridled and unburdened and unbridled and released.
You know, listening to her, every time I listen to her speak, it reminds me of Billy Madison. And at the end of her talking, I just want to be like, what you just said made absolutely no sense. And everybody in this room here is much dumber for having heard it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Exactly, because we don't know. You know, again, her off teleprompter,
yeah,
it is nothing but a, you know, she just hadn't really taken these things seriously. You have no problem locking up people, wrongly accused people on death row for life imprisonment. And we somehow are supposed to say, you're locking up the wrong people. And the ones who should be locked up, you give them freedom. The ones who, it's just a discombobulated decision-making process. Yep. You know, now your selection of your VP makes no sense. But again, this is the pattern of a person who's kind of just been wrong. And then also doesn't have the humility or the integrity to just say, you know, at one point I thought fracking was wrong. But upon further review, I got more knowledge now to say I support fracking. But you can't do that because we know you're a flip-flopper. You're just saying this now. Because if that's the case, where was this flip-flopping or this transformation when you was VP? What was this you and the president openly having a debate on, is fracking bad?
I almost
you can't have these positions and don't show your progression to getting there. Because without that progression, it sounds disingenuous. And you're just doing whatever. You're just saying whatever to get what you want.
I almost kind of think, you know, as we're talking right now, because my opinion was, you know, this is a lot of opinion of a lot of people. Like, Joe Biden, at no point in time, while he's been in office, has been running this country, right? He's not there. He's just, so it's like the country can go down the tubes, and it's like, how would it not with somebody who's not even mentally there? So it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm like talking about like a shadow government or something, but like making the country go so bad, but putting in somebody there that's so ridiculous that it's like, we don't know what to be frustrated at more. And people, it is almost like a way to make people have no hope. Cause it's kind of like, how the hell that walking dead body get 81 million votes, and then watch what's happening and him not leading the country, not speaking on anything. When he does speak, you're like, how they didn't invoke the 25th Amendment 3 years ago on him. But I almost want to say that Kamala reminds me of Sarah Palin.
Okay.
And I kind of think that the Republicans purposely lost to Obama at that time because they knew the nature of the economy and the country, and they didn't want to be held responsible for it. So I kind of see Kamala as this baffling imbecile, and it's on full display. So people are like, oh my God, like, how bad could this get? And the powers that be wanted to get very, very bad. Yeah. And she's the perfect scapegoat.
Kamala did it.
Yeah. And it's just Kamala like, well, it. Yeah, I would expect her to do it. Have you heard her talk? She talks in a way that if I was, you know, if I was a teacher of a class in fourth grade and I expected my class to pay attention and I just explained something and I picked the worst student in the class to define for me what I just told them, And when they go to define it, they literally use the title of what it is I'm asking for them in the definition of, do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's not how English works. It's like, right. What is the ball? Well, a ball is the ball because it's the ball. And it's such a round ball that when you touch it, you just know it's a ball. And you're like, that's
not you, how you wouldn't listen at all.
Defined anything.
Right.
You know, so our closing statements here, because I don't want to keep you all night, Orlando. Closing statements. What would you say? Yeah, I don't necessarily want to target the Black community, but what would you say to, you know, maybe the Black community that might see this, who are on the fence right now?
Sure. I would say if you're on the fence, you have the capacity and the ability, especially with social media. Look back over the 4 years when Trump was in office and look at this present 4 years. And there's no comparison. It just isn't.
And we can expect more of the same if you elect the person that was literally in second in command under the one that was in first command, you know? So it's, I agree with you. Well, Orlando, I really want to thank you for your time tonight. And thank you for sharing. Thank you for your journey. Thank you for all your efforts in Milwaukee and the projects you're doing. You know, they sound very important and very well thought out. And
can I get my website?
Yeah, actually, yes, please. Anything that you want to plug right now, go ahead and do that for our viewers.
If you have the capacity, I know it's tough for a lot of Americans, but if you have any capacity to make a donation to keep our door knockers and our campuses going, go to Orlando4, which is forwi.com. Orlando4wi.com. It takes you to our website as far as Project Moon and Needle, and there's a donate button. You can call me directly at 414-803-6003. We need your help. America is still worth fighting for.
Repeat that number again for them.
414-803-6003.
And everybody, this has been Orlando Owens. He's, a great guy. He's a Republican chairman of the Milwaukee North Branch. Check out his project, Move the Needle. You know, we really have to take this election seriously because we really are on the verge of losing our identity as the United States of America here. So again, Orlando, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, sir. You were amazing. And, I have a lot of optimism for this.
Thank you, man. You made it easy. And I see this, you're good at this, my friend. Keep doing the work. Call me back anytime.
Thank you, Orlando. Again, this has been the My First Amendment Right podcast. I'm Christopher Ashe, Orlando Owens. Check him out, and we will catch you guys next week.